Welcome to Beyond the Quo, this podcast where we rewrite the rules, break boundaries, and redefine success on our own terms. I'm your host, Stacey Lucas. I'm an executive coach, reinvention strategist, and the founder of the Living Beyond Movement. If you are here, and if you have been with me for the last 30 episodes, thank you. And if you're here, you're probably a trailblazer, because anybody that wants to live outside or beyond the quo, beyond that status quo, is definitely someone that's tired of playing small. You're looking for more. We're all looking for more than those massive to-do lists. We're craving impact, authenticity, and alignment. And you're not alone. Today's guest is someone who embodies exactly what's possible when you stop asking for permission and start owning your voice with unapologetic power. Dr. Sheena Howard is an award-winning author, filmmaker, professor, and the first Black woman to win an Eisner Award at the San Diego Comic-Con. Her work, from Why Wakanda Matters to founding Nerdworks, love that, and Power Your Research, is flipping the script on what it means to be a scholar, a creator, and a culturally rooted entrepreneur. She's been featured everywhere from PBS and NPR to Good Morning America and now Beyond the Quo. And today she's here to talk about what creative entrepreneurship looks like, what bold storytelling can feel like, and how to build a six-figure brand without waiting for permission. So whether you're building your first business, writing your first book, or finally stepping into your next act, grab your journal, grab your favorite cup of whatever, and let's get into it. Sheena, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited. I don't do podcasts like at all. So this is a nice treat for me.
It's a treat for me. And so even though all of these things, of course, are so impressive and inspiring about you, we've known each other for a couple of years. Sheena and I shared the same business coach a couple of years ago, Mark Canty. And what I love the most about you is you are the same person that you were when we met all those years ago, and all of the things and this freaking amazing trajectory that you've had in the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, still, you left me a voice note the other day and you started it and I literally got emotional because you said, honey child, with that voice, because you were giving me some parenting advice for my creative daughter. And I can't tell you, I don't know if people know this about you, but the you that shows up on social media is so inspiring, because I think for a lot of us, that's still the block, right? And I know we're kind of jumping into it, but tell me a little bit about what it takes to sort of be that transparent and real. I call it the real talk, R-E-A-L talk versus the R-E-E-L real talk. What is that? What does that look and feel like? And more importantly, how do you teach that, right? Like, how does that look?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. First, you gotta know who you are and love who you are and be comfortable in who you are.
That part.
That is so hard to do, yo. Yeah. So, and I had to go through a lot of tough things to get there that required me to really just self-reflect and just really like get back to the core of who I am and the values that like my upbringing gave me to figure out who I was. 'Cause society and those types of things can really distract you from who you are and being happy with who you actually are. Yeah. So social media is easy to show up as yourself when you are clear on who you are and you are the same person when nobody's looking. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's necessary, right? It's necessary because I think a lot of us are tired of being sold to or talked at. And I think social media is such a blanket term, but it permeates everything and every part of what we do right now, and even how we meet people. I mean, back in the day, I don't know about you, but I was going to like a library or a grocery store. I met my husband at a grocery store.
I love that.
Right. But now I'm my friends and people I talk to and guests certainly that are in the market. That's how we're so, even you and I, we've never met in person. And
which
I can,
is crazy.
Which is crazy.
I feel like I've met you in person, but like I'm sitting here thinking like I've never actually met you in person.
But we
like,
are
like really friends.
Yes. And it's because technology and sort of the permeance of getting to know and keeping up with each other in the virtual space is the norm. Right. Yeah. And so we want more of the real deal before we really seal the deal. If we're talking, for taking it back to business a little bit. Right. How do you teach that to like different generations?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just grateful that I live in the time period that I live in because I like being able to connect with people that are not just in my immediate proximity. Like I have so many people in my community from like Canada and the UK. Mm. I was talking to someone in Africa the other day who's in my community. And it's just I would never meet you or these amazing people if it wasn't for me being born in this time period where we just can meet people from around the world, literally like at our fingertips. And I think that a lot of people don't think about it that way as an opportunity. I am grateful for the opportunity to be able to meet so many people. That's why I try really hard on social media to actually respond to people in my DMs.
You do.
Like I get like hundreds of DMs every, but I try to like respond to everyone because I actually meet people and want to meet people. Like, it's an opportunity. I just see it all as an opportunity.
Yeah. And I think you also have, as a creator, you also have this, like it's an effervescence about you. I don't know if everybody's ever used that word for you, but there's like an effervescence about you and a curiosity about, tell me more.
Like, yeah, that's me. Yeah. Yep.
How do you translate some of that magic into, because you hold different roles. I know at the core and the forefront of who you are, you're a mama to that beautiful little boy that you, even watching the way you parent him, you give him unabashed permission, whether it was his first book or his first book signing or even disappointments if you didn't make the sale or whatever, right? Because I watched that journey and learned from it, even as an author myself, to just, I think you were in the snow. You were like wheeling a wagon in the snow and you like either went to the wrong building or picked up the wrong bag and you made it into like this normal ass thing. And I was just howling. But I think that people underestimate a couple of things. One, how you can still turn the grind into the find. Right? Yeah. Like you don't have to like be perfect. And I want to fucking talk about that a little bit. Like this perfection is still grinding me. Like perfection is still the thing coming from my background in corporate where one note, if I wrote an announcement in our office, it had to go through, I think, 9 or 10 layers of approval. And I feel like still when I write or when I show up, I have to be like I almost have to, you know, they say snap a rubber band to break the pattern, right? I have to like, girl, like just put it out there, right? How do you parent and do the things that you're doing and still show up like for yourself? Like tell us a little bit about Sheena, like the human behind the machine, right?
Oh, I thought you were going somewhere else with that question about perfectionism. And I was like, my brain was ready to talk about that too,
right? I don't see that in you, but I feel like it's one of those stealth mode things, right? That sneaks up on us.
I think perfectionism is tied to so many other things that we have to work on inside ourselves. Trying to be perfect is not necessarily creating something that's quality. Right.
I love that.
Yeah. I remember a few months ago, I posted a little screenshot of a sentence, like a couple of sentences for my dissertation and it had a grammatical error in it. And when I posted it, I saw that the little clip had a grammatical error in it. And I was like, oh, I should probably post because I don't want people to see that my dissertation has a grammatical error in it. And then I realized, like, no, I'm keeping it up because I wrote an 150 page dissertation. And if I have a couple of grammatical errors, who cares? Because the average person has grammatical errors in everything they write. Listen. And it's just human. And somebody, so I left it up there and somebody commented like, oh, you wrote a dissertation and it has a grammatical error in it. Ha ha ha. But you know what? I left that comment up there too.
Yeah.
Because most people don't care. They actually, listen, we're living in a world of AI. When people see a grammatical error, they know that a human wrote that, right?
Yes. Yes.
So it's like, people want realness.
Yeah.
A lot of things that people gravitate towards are not perfect. So you can strive for quality, which I do, which is why people like to work with me because they know I'm going to put something out quality. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to be perfect. And honestly, as a writer, published, I always look back and be like, man, I wish I had a did X, Y, and Z. It's just never going to be perfect. So I just learned to like let that go and just trust that it's going to find the right people.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what it's about.
Yeah. And the funny thing is you've got that one hater, which by the way, you know, you've made it when you have a hater.
I love my haters, baby. Thank you, hater. By the way, flip this out and let's put this on social media to all my haters. Thank you. Thank you for doubting me. Thank you for telling me I couldn't.
Yes.
Thank you for treating me like crap because you helped me get to the place that I was supposed to get to. I needed you to help me find me. So thank you, haters.
And
thank you.
And on the other side of that coin, and I shared this with you. I don't know. It must have been last year. I was doing some deep research using ChatGPT for a thing I'm building, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And I said, give me the trailblazers. I don't even know the prompt I use that are in this space. And my space is women of color, powerful voices, blah, blah, blah. And you were in the top, I think it was 20 or 40. I don't even care. And I had this out of body experience. You know, like when you, when your dad or your mom's like an actress and you see them on air and you're like, that's my mom. I was like, that's my friend on ChatGPT, Dr. Sheena Howard. And it listed all of your creds and I screenshotted it. And I think I sent you like this excited as voicemail.
Yeah.
And I was like, look at where, look at what's showing up for you.
That's crazy.
It's crazy.
Like that's just crazy.
So to all the haters and to all the, you know, cheerleaders and all those quiet souls that really support the work that you do and the way that you do it, there's both sides to the story, right? There always is.
Mm-hmm.
There's chat showing you up as top 40 trailblazer. Wow. And there is some fool saying, hey, you missed the apostrophe.
Right. Yeah, you know, in life, there's people that create out there and try. And then there are people that make fun of people for trying.
Mm-hmm.
And who do you want to be?
Yeah. Who do you want to be? Right. So 81% of people feel like they have a book in them, but only 3% ever actually write it. Tell me about this gap between potential and action. Because I know when I was writing my book, I redid that thing so many times and I had written my first draft in 2019 and then end of 2019 and then 2020 happened and the world changed. And honestly, I changed. I had this massive transformation and we had a lot of delays with the book and so on and so forth. But I wanted to rewrite my part of that compilation because I was different. And I had so many nerves about it because, you know, you are who you think you are until some shit goes down and you are transformed, right? Sometimes it's in a moment. But tell me, like, what would you say to the people that feel they have a story within them? And I know you ghostwrite for like some really important people. Mm-hmm. What's that process like, both as a human embodying someone else's voice to some extent, but just getting the words on paper, like what's your best kind of strategies for people that are the 81%? That's a huge, huge, wow. That's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people. Yeah. And the reason why I like ghostwriting so much is because I think everybody's story is someone else's survival guide.
So
if I can even just help a handful of people get their work out there and they need to use me to write their story, I'm honored to do that. Like, I love writing and ghostwriting for people because a lot of people can't get to the finish line of writing their book. Like, writing is a skill. right? Writing is not, it's like everything else. You got to learn it, and it's hard, and it's a lot involved in writing your story. So for the people that don't want to hire a ghostwriter, can't afford a ghostwriter, it's just like everything else. You got to wake up every day and do a little bit at a time. Mm-hmm. You got to write a little bit at a time. And you probably should pay for some sort of coaching, because it's like going the distance, yeah. right? Between starting the book and finishing it is a tough process. So if you can't show up for yourself every day and just write a little bit every day until it's done, hire a coach to help you stay accountable or help you through that writing process, or just hire a ghostwriter to do it for you.
Yeah.
But it really is one of those things where it's like, write a little bit every day.
Yeah. I want to give you some flowers, right? I know in this podcast, we talk a lot about breaking barriers. And I think a lot of times that it's like wearing a superwoman cape. Like, it sounds really heroic, right? It's like, oh yeah, I can do it all. But there's a price we pay for that. There's either a spiritual, emotional, physical price that we pay for this concept of consistently breaking barriers, showing up for everybody but ourselves. And there's not a lot of glamour in behind the curtain, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about kind of, you are the first, there's a lot of headlines that celebrate the first woman or the first Black woman or the first founder in a space of a certain race or ethnicity. And we rarely talk about kind of what happens after the headline fades, or more importantly, what it had to take to get to the headline, right?
Mm-hmm.
The micro decisions, the second guessing. You talk about these little tiny hiring people to help you on the journey. Because, you know, a lot of us, people of color, shy away from asking for help or paying for help because it's ingrained in us to take that money, that investment, and honestly fix the fence or paint the house or... right? We think like, oh my God, I don't want to quote unquote pour it back into myself, right? But that's that emotional mirror, that emotional toil that you have been through being the first of so many. And I specifically want to talk about this Eisner Award. It's both a mirror and a megaphone, right? Like, not always visible to any of us, what it took to get that, what it took to have your PhD, what it took to have people tell you didn't belong in the university that you were at. I know you write about some person saying they devalued, you being there devalued her experience or something like that. But what do people not understand about the emotional labor of representation when you're the first?
Yeah, so when you're the first at stealing or breaking a barrier or something like that, first of all, you're going to get a lot of haters. Okay. Yeah. It just is, right? Every person that did anything great has a whole lot of loud people that hate them. Mm-hmm. Right. So that comes with the territory, and that part is not fun. Right. And your circle gets smaller because you really have to protect your peace, energy, and time. Mm-hmm. The more you go up the ladder of success, it just is. The other thing is, I think anybody that has a great idea, everybody has a story of somebody telling them that it's trash. I mean, I haven't a podcast with a successful person who didn't say somebody along the way didn't believe in me, told me it was trash, told me I couldn't do it. I think that's just part of the process. That might even be evidence that you're on to something. Like, somebody telling you no, you can't, might be evidence that you're on to something at this point. But the real thing is just being in the idea that the universe has put into your mind, body, and spirit, and sticking with it. It's like you have the idea, you have the thing you want to do, but yo, it could be 10 years before that thing pops. Are you willing to stay in the game that long for the thing that you believe in? That's it right there. You got to stick with it.
I'm going to pull a thread on something you said at the beginning of this, which was the ability to also lead, live, be authentic, whether it's online, in person, in your writing, with your clients. It doesn't matter. As a parent, right? As a partner, as a friend, you've got to... I don't know how to say this enough. If you don't actively love, appreciate, honor, have integrity with yourself. And many of us are still trying to learn that. Like every day, it's like little weeds pop up and you got to go into your own lawn and be like, oh my God, I thought I had it. I thought I was good. And you get up and you just lay in bed like, I don't know if I can do this. Am I doing the right thing? Why me? Why? You know, there are at least 12 times a week as an entrepreneur, as a creative, I get up and I'm like, shit, should I just go get a 9-to-5? Wouldn't that be so easy? To sit mindlessly at a cubicle. Hey, no offense to anybody who's at a cubicle right now. I don't even know those are still around. But I tell you, I have the thought at least a couple times a week. And then I laugh. Mm-hmm. No thanks.
Right.
But that insidious self-worth piece is so paramount in what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And the ability to bounce back, right? And to keep going 10 years from now. Do we have that in us, right? That's a question we got to ask ourselves. Am I willing to wait 10 years for the fruition of this thing?
Right.
Oh.
Because my thing is, I want to look back and be like, man, I might have given up right before I was about to win.
Yeah.
Like every time that I want to give up, I'm like, man, I could give up today, but like next week might be that thing that I needed to take me to the next level. Do I really want to risk giving up right before I was about to win? The answer for me is always no. No, I don't want to give up right before I was about to win. That is so scary to me. I do not want to be at the end of my life thinking, tag, I should have just did that one more thing. Mm-hmm. I should have. No. That's not acceptable for me and what I'm trying to build.
Mm-hmm. I love that. One of the, in my coaching practice, one of the core exercises we do, there's two ways to do it, right? One is the soft way. I ease this into people who I think can't handle the other way. But the softer way to do it is you're 80 years old in a rocking chair and you're looking back over your life and you are literally giving yourself the flowers, right? Like, what did you do that made you proud, Sheena? And nobody, no one is like, well, you know, here at 80 years old, I'm like fixing my dentures and creaking in my rocking chair and I've got, you know, $1 billion in the bank. No one. Mm-hmm. I have two, you know, worldwide conglomerates. No, people are talking about the legacy they left, the people they helped, the communities they uplifted. But a lot of times too, it's the regrets, right? Like, well, I shoulda, coulda, woulda, right? And then the tougher exercise, which is the one, you know, I like a tougher exercise, built incorrectly, is write your eulogy as you are today. So sit right down and get a pen and piece of paper and no fluff. Write it as you are today. And when I did that, and I have, you know, no shame about this, when I did it a couple of years ago, I don't know, maybe 7 years ago, I was a mediocre wife. I was an average. Listen, we were literally roommates. We were still madly in love with each other, but the routine and the hectic lifestyle was the beat, right? And so you've got small kids, you got freaking diaper bags, drop off and pick up, soccer practice, jujitsu, whatever. And it was like, hey, how are you? Hi, how are you? Right? Like literally ships in the night and date night. I mean, I just wanted to sleep.
Mm.
And as a mom, really the doer, less the nurturer, right? As a friend, drive-by friend, right? Like it sometimes probably takes, if this is you, I'm talking to whoever's listening. If it's taken you 4 weeks to schedule a 1 hour coffee date with your friends that you love, like something's got to shift. And really, after I wrote that and I rewrote what I wanted to do, like an hour later, like what I wanted that to read, you know, it was some shit like, oh, I want to be an international best-selling author. I want to own my own company. Like the future me on paper. And then that led to all of it literally coming to fruition years later, right? But you've got to put in some hard reflection time. There was a stupid, it's not stupid in the sense of dumb, but it was just so simple. This person gave this example of you having a smudge of dirt on your face and buying every single cleaner there was and looking in the mirror and cleaning the glass to get the smudge off. Right here, right? So what do you say to the people that are still living at status quo, honestly unwilling to do the hard work? Cause it's hard what you do, right? And that's, we glorify that, but it's also a degree of the humanness of you. Hey, I don't want next week to be the week that I could have made it and I cashed out. Like, what does it take to get up every day and like revisit the script?
Yeah, I think you have to commit to your purpose. Yeah. I think you have to not wait for someone else to tell you what your purpose is. I think it's a commitment. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I believe I was put on this earth to do. And then really believe it and commit to it. I remember I used to pray to God, like literally this is my prayer. Please God, tell me what my purpose is. Like I would like almost be in tears. Like, what am I on this earth to do? And one day I just realized, like, put it on a bus and the bus could drive and talk and speak directly to me. And I will look at it and be like, nah, I don't really believe that was a sign from God. I don't really believe that's my purpose. Because it wasn't about that. It was about me making a commitment and believing that this was the thing I'm supposed to do. It's like, you know, you got to commit to what you say you want and then just go all in on it, really.
What have you committed to, do you think? What are like some deep, unshakable commitments that you think you've made that sustain you when doubts kind of set in?
Oh, I just want to be a rich and famous writer.
I like, love it.
It's very simple. Like, yeah, you know, some people are afraid to say what they actually want because they're afraid of people's judgments. But at this big age, I do not have time to be afraid to say what I really want to be and what I really want in life, which is, you know, I see a lot of authors, they take 3 years to write a book, they publish a book, and what did they say? I will be happy if just one person read it.
Oh, hell no.
What? You spent 3 years and wrote 100,000 words and that's the prayer that you have? No, just be honest with yourself. Uh-huh. And I'm talking to people who this resonates with.
Yeah.
Like, be honest with why you really wrote that book and what you really want to happen. Because I want 1 billion people to read my stuff. Now, obviously layers, because just wanting money is not going to get you up every day. If you're just doing it for the money, that ain't getting you up
every day. That's not sustainable.
Like, I believe that I can be somebody's light in the darkness. And I believe me showing up every day puts me in another position for my work to inspire someone else. And I believe if I don't show up, that person can't find me, can't see me. And I really want to help people see the light at the end of the tunnel, truly. Because it's a cold world. It's a dark world. Mm. I don't care what anybody says. Chaotic place. It's a lot of unhappy, mentally unhealthy people. And some of it, I believe, is because people are not actually doing what they're called to do. And I'm not even, you can keep your 9-to-5, but you still have a right to go after the thing that's in your heart. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm trying to say to people. Like, go after the thing you really want. I promise you, you'll be a lot happier. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to involve, like, not being home with your kids and just leaving your 9-to-5 and going all in on. It doesn't. You could do both.
Yeah. Yeah. There's three things that happen after people go through transformative programs, right? Like, whether it's coaching or whatever the transformation journey looks like, in my opinion, three things happen. One, there's probably like a 70% understand, here's where I am, point A, I want to get to point B. There's some kind of map from A to B, and these are the mini steps that I need to take to close the gap so that I'm not this way at A, I am, you know, future me at B. Most people, right? Some people, lucky ones, have angst about their life. I coulda, shoulda, woulda, right? But when you mm-hmm. dive into your life in a way that's thoughtful, methodical, spiritual, you're like, oh, I was living by someone else's definition of authenticity, wealth, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so you calm the hell down because it's like, it's like, no. I'm safe. Yeah. I'm loved. I'm protected. I have the money that I need to live a good life. I'm happy. Mm-hmm. And that feels really weird because we're mm-hmm. always supposed to think of the Superwoman cape. Like be on call for the next mission, man. And it doesn't have to be that way. You could be happy, but you won't know it until you get through the same journey. Oh no, I'm okay at A. I don't need to get to B because mm-hmm. guess what? I don't even know what B would have looked like. And I would have kept trying my whole life and been miserable thinking I was mm-hmm. like late to the party or whatever. And then there's mm-hmm. the third portion of people that are, it's a tiny percentile. And like you said, you know, it's quite okay to stay in the 9 to 5, yo. That's amazing. But if you are there and you are content and you are happy, know that and relax and live a good life. If you are, hey, I'm here, but it still feels a little wonky, know what it takes to close the gap. Whether it's your purpose has nothing to do with your job and you start a creative process or volunteering on a board for homeless folks, whatever mm-hmm. the hole in your heart is to serve, like do that and close that gap. But there's a percentage of us, and I put myself in that category where I saw the gap, I almost died, and everything had to change. And so these are the leave the matrix type of people. Like the reinvention people that just like, nope, that's not it. Gotta go quit my job. My husband stayed the same. But you know what I mean? Like you recalibrate your life. And so I guess what I'm saying is both Sheena's story and my story and the people's story that you hear on this podcast and any story that you hear, there's some variation of those three avatars, if you will. Mm-hmm. But until you do that self-work, and even you very confidently stating who you want to be and what your dream is with no frills about it, it's not a knock on anybody else. It's just know what you want and go get mm-hmm. it, right? How do we teach that to our kids, girl? Like, and the generation after us, right? Like, how do we, because you're right, like mental, I want to call it, I don't want to say unwell, but they're shaken, right? Like they've been through some mm-hmm. stuff, and that mm-hmm. level of grit, that's necessary, I think, to really quickly bounce back, mm-hmm. Is a bit compromised. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I try to do a lot of, reminding my son that who he is okay.
Yeah.
And not making him feel bad about who he naturally is. I think sometimes as parents, we see the way we want our child to be. I want you to be outgoing. We may even have visions of what we think they can do in life. Mm. But that might be totally opposite to who they are. Mm-hmm. Like you might just have a shy, introverted kid and just telling him that's okay.
Yeah.
Now, of course, I'm going to teach you that you need to communicate. And when you show up into the room, you got to be able to articulate your ideas. But that's different than me saying, hey, like, it's an extroverted world and you need to be more like that. Mm-hmm. So just being like, hey, I love who you are. I love who you are. Hey, like, you don't think like the other kids do. I love that about you. Mm-hmm. Like, right. And just affirming that the person that they are is amazing and beautiful.
Yeah.
Because we're human as parents. We do have ideas about what we want our kids to do, think, and be like.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of learning that I feel like these kids are also put on this earth because they're teaching their parents some lessons they got to learn.
Let me tell you, my children are the lesson. Every time I think I made it to the level and I'm like, oh yeah, boom. The challenge happens and I've got to level up And a lot of the leveling up means revisiting what I thought, truths I thought, or perceptions or perspectives that I thought to be the way, but it's not, for given where we are in the world right now. It requires a degree of humility from me to get with the program.
Yeah, one of the biggest blessings, because when you get older, you do, if you had good parents.
Yeah.
Right? No, and I'm just saying that because everybody has
it. Not everybody has it, yep.
You get, if you were raised good, I think the more you can, when times get tough as you get older, those core values and things that your parents gave you really kick in, because you, like, I can literally, when times are tough or I'm going through things, I can literally go back to like my 7-year-old self in my head and be like, who my mother raised me to be and the values and framework she gave me work every single time for every single thing I've experienced, for every time I needed to be resilient. I have that anchor of my mother, because I was raised by a single mom. So I'm not even, like, you can be raised right with your aunties. Like, I'm just saying, like, these core things that you learned as a kid, and some people don't even have that anchor, so it's tougher.
Yeah.
But I just, going back to like my parents raised me to be, like, this is really who I am. Like, these things that I learned at 7 years old is who I am.
Yeah.
That's going to carry me through.
Yeah.
Whatever. I can deal with anything because I got those core messages when I was young.
I love that. I mean, I have been on this journey myself of kind of, you know, rediscovering myself. And that sounds weird, right? I mean, to the people that know me, they're like, no, you're you. You've always been this way, blah, blah, blah. But I knew that in the last, specifically 5 years, it's been such a an unbecoming and a going back to dance, right? And I went to my birth country, Trinidad, last year after many years away with my mom. And it ironically was my birthday, like, while I was there. And
oh, I love that.
It felt like a coming home in a different sense, not in the sense of the actual country, but the coming home to me. But there were so many differences. Like, the school that I went to was not there anymore. It had been demolished. The house I grew up in had been changed. The tree that I used to read under, and then I have all of these delicious memories of as a child, as a young girl, like, running away and, like, going under this big, they used to call it like a salmon tree, the ones with the big drapey like leaves. It wasn't there anymore. And I felt such grief and nostalgia, but also it was liberating, because a lot of the baggage that I didn't even know I was holding on to was just gently released, right? It wasn't a big production. But I think that going back to yourself, even 7-year-old you, right? All of us have natural traits or affinity for natural things that we are good at. And I think, ask the people that kind of have been in your circle, if you are blessed to have people that transcend versions of you, you know, there's an asshole version and then like a real chill version and the mom version, like,
come on now,
right?
Oh, man.
If you have people that have witnessed versions of you, they will know at least two or three things about you. And in any good branding exercise, or any good coach will tell you, ask three questions of the people that know you. What are three things that you know to be true about me? And what are three things that I can work on? And some of it is icky, right? Like, they could be like, you're stubborn or whatever. But most of the time, it will be like, you're a very kind person. You're maybe not nice, but you're kind. Or you're always laughing or finding the, and you, we don't see ourselves the way that people see us. We almost have this, sometimes a critical, more critical eye, right? So I tell my husband sometimes and my kids, I'm like, you guys look at me through loving eyes. And that sometimes we need that. You need people that look at us through loving eyes, not whatever our barriers are for the thing that we think we're doing, right? Speaking of that, I freaking love Nerdworks. Listen, people see me and listen, I'm at my heart, I'm an island girl. I love a good party, right? I laugh loud. I wear bright colors. Guys, we didn't even plan this yellow whole outing here, okay? But it happened. But tell me about Nerdworks. I'm a nerd at heart. Like, you give me a bag of books, you give me a quiet room, you give me scholarly work. Like, I just love learning and adapting and applying. Like, the mechanics of it is sexy to me, right? Tell me about your vision for Nerdworks, and like, just the name of it is so cute. But what are some of your dreams for that? And what can people, like, you know, I want people to join your community and get to know you and stuff, but tell us about that.
Yeah, Nerdworks is just the name of my writing company and personal brand. It's like, if you hire me for something, the contracts are going to say Nerdworks. So everything I do is just under my Nerdworks name. I came up with that name, I think, in like 2016, 2014, whenever I first formed my company. It's just a name that spoke to me. And so I run all of my business, my personal brand, my writing company through Nerdworks.
But it says so much about you, right? Like, it says so much about, there's a little rebel in that, right?
Yeah. It's a storytelling and image activism company. Yeah. So by now I feel like my company is really like just like a media empire. Cause I go to the studio, I do content.
Yes.
Of course I ghostwrite and all that kind of stuff. So now it's like, it's more than just a writing company. It's like a media company because I can create content for people. I've created courses for people. I've filmed them, right? And they own the rights and all that good stuff.
I love that.
Everything is based in writing, though.
So you've done a TEDx talk, right? You were on Jeopardy. You were a clue on Jeopardy, my girl.
My book was, yeah.
Your book, right? And you've won kind of this amazing award. What do you hope that people know about the process of these amazing, courageous things that you've done? What do you hope, like, from the term of the theme of living courageously, right? Leading courageously. A lot of times we think leading is this big thing that somebody else does. And, you know, how do you lead yourself on these journeys in spaces where maybe you look different, speak different, feel differently? You are the only. Like, what does leading courageously look like in those spaces?
So almost like all of my biggest accomplishments weren't a part of the plan. Mm. They just happened in pursuit of the larger plan. So, and I'm okay if I have a big goal.
Yeah.
Let's say my goal is to be a New York Times bestseller. And that's the thing I'm going after. And that's the thing I said I'm going to spend 10 years doing. This is just hypothetical. Now, on this journey to becoming a New York Times bestseller, if I'm committed to the work, it's going to be very hard. It's going to take a long time. Mm-hmm. But what I've learned is that in pursuit of that goal, some amazing things happen that you didn't expect that might actually be better than the New York Times bestseller goal,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, like, very small list of people that can say their book was a clue on Jeopardy. Mm-hmm. Probably the list of people that are New York Times bestsellers is longer than that list.
Yes.
Right? So in pursuit of trying to be a famous, rich writer, pursuit of it. That's what I'm saying. Don't give up because like, you're going to get these small wins that weren't even a part of your bucket list that end up like being like, oh, like, I'm never a New York Times bestseller. Like, I did all of these other things that, like, this is great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like having a dream date in mind and then like the Rolls Royce rolls up of dates that you didn't even envision. Like that's why I laugh when I say, you know, I have all these plans. I had all these plans for my life, but what is actually happening? I couldn't even conceptualize.
Yeah. You don't know what you don't know. So that's why you just got to keep trying to go after the big goals.
Yeah. Yeah. So what would you like to say to people like about you and about how you approach the world and your creative process and what working with you feels like and where they can find you?
I just want to help people see the light at the end of the tunnel and not give up. So I want you to see my videos. Hopefully they hit you on the day when you're about to be like, I'm just going to give up on this big dream I had and just kind of go put it in the closet and close the door. Like, that's when I want you to see this interview, my content, all of that stuff. I want more happy, fulfilled people in the world because that makes my life better. Right?
Right. Yes.
Angry people every day. And I'm like, yo, if you just had a purpose and a goal, you would not be doing that crazy. I promise you.
Yeah.
If you have a goal or purpose you're committed to, you are not going to do some of dumb things we see people do. Because you're like, man, that's fine. If I do that dumb thing, that might, you know, prevent me from getting to my goal, my purpose. Like, no, I want to curse people out in the store all the time that talk crazy to me. But I'm not going to do that because I'm like, you know, I'm trying to be a rich and famous writer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You do not want that to go viral.
In the fast food place, right? Like,
I think that people can sometimes opt out of the thing that they are missing because they can't find it. And I've found in my life recently, if I can't find a thing, I've started creating it. And I think that can be true. So when people think of a creator or creatives, they have this notion of this, you know, this, I don't know, an avatar in their head about what that looks like. It can be regular people that are creating a knitting community. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So a creative is an attitude. Mm-hmm. And so if there are things I think in the world, and that's kind of the beat I'm on, is if I can't find it and I've looked and I've tried, I'm going to go create it myself if it means that much to me. And I think that's the thing that I appreciate deeply about you, is on the journey to being a rich, successful writer. You've done all of these creative things that have built a legacy for your family and for you and for the work, right? For the spaces that you're in. And I think there's so much beauty and lessons in that. And I just want to thank you for hopping on. And I know you don't do podcasts and stuff, but you know, you did good.
This was great. Yes. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I love that. Where can people find you and follow you, Sheena?
At Dr. Sheena Howard. So yes. At DrSheenaHoward. That's everywhere.
Yeah. And go look for the post where she was featured in Times Square.
Oh, yes. Let's go, baby.
I was hollering at that. Like, it was like my picture up there. Listen, I'm a fan is like an understatement. I consider you like a sister friend. And I feel like we've grown up through the ranks of this. And obviously, you know, hopefully we meet this year. Let's put that on the docket. Yeah, I think that would be amazing. All right. For so sure. Hopefully everyone, thanks for joining us today. And if this conversation lit a fire under you, good, right? That means you're ready. And that itchy, uncomfortable feeling, that discomfort, wherever you're feeling it in your cheeks or your head or your stomach or, ooh, good. I hope it feels uncomfortable, because conversations like these are geared to poke at that discomfort, but better yet, right? Like, give you some sort of remedy or solution that has worked for other people to get out of that status quo and find something different. So if you're ready to stop shrinking and ready to tell your story and ready to stop waiting for someone else to give you the script or the rule book, like, go create it, like, figure it out, get the help that you need. Read a book, do a podcast. I always say it's not a lack of resources, it's a lack of resourcefulness. Right? So if you have loved what you heard, please follow Sheena. She's such a joy on Instagram and YouTube, all the places. I laugh every time and I love that. And I wouldn't consider myself your true avatar, but I enjoy you so much that I send people your way all the time. Please consider joining my Rising Beyond Power community. It is a community for women of color leaders across the world. We're just at 100 people. I do that with my co-founder, Lola Small, and we have a space where we have conversations like these, and we dig into strategies, and we do, I don't want to call it a hot seat, but we call it a fancy transformation table. But definitely you will find more things like this. And please, please, please share this episode with someone you know that is in this space that could use these amazing, amazing insights that Sheena just shared with us, because she's brilliant and brilliance needs to be shared. And if you're building something bold, please tag Sheena and I. We'd love to cheer you on. And you've already done the quo, so it's time to go beyond. Catch you next week. Thanks, Sheena.
Thank you.